Take a deep breath. And remember, there's a power. Breathing you. This is your space of sanity in an evolving world, where we learn about spiritual law and how to apply it to our lives in a way that is practical and life-changing. This is where we remember truth to make the world a better place, one person at a time. I'm Claire Lautier, inspirational speaker, teacher of the technology of transformation, and a certified life mastery consultant and spiritual growth mentor. Welcome to the Grace Space. Everything happens according to law. Chance is but a name for law not recognized. There are many planes of causation, but nothing escapes the law. So says the ancient Kybalion, a document that lays out the fundamental principles of the universe, the laws by which everything operates. Whenever anything's happening in life that we don't understand, which is basically every day, this is a reminder to trust, to surrender, and be open to understandings of a higher order. Things that we can't see when we're stuck in the details of our daily life. But when we take altitude, when we allow ourselves to come out of our personal preferences, we start to be able to see that there's something higher going on that has nothing to do with us. Nothing happens by chance. Nothing happens outside the law. Chance is but a name for law not recognized. And often, when things happen that do not please us, when life does not conform to our expectations or hopes, we feel as if some injustice is being perpetrated upon us. Even if, in fact, some injustice is being perpetrated upon us in a very real sense, it cannot be outside of the law. Because everything happens according to law. This is the principle of karma. And it's confronting to the ego. Naturally, the ego wants what it wants, and it's never satisfied. There's always an external reason why we can't be okay right now. Or an internal reason. This is why the Buddha said that all of life is suffering. He wasn't trying to, be a downer. He was just observing that we constantly take issue with the past, the present, or the future to justify our negativity, our resistance, or dissatisfaction. If we're stuck in the past, our negativity expresses itself as, if only such and such hadn't happened, I would be okay, but it did happen, and that's why I'm not okay. Or, if only such and such had happened, I would be okay, but it didn't, and that's why I'm not okay. If we're caught up in the future, our inner dialogue tends to be along the lines of, I need such and such to happen so that I can be okay, and I resent that it hasn't happened yet. Maybe my resentment will make it happen. Or, I need such and such not to happen so that I can be okay, and I'm afraid that it will happen. Maybe my fear will ensure that it doesn't happen. If we're in resistance to the present, our inner dialogue tends to be like, I'm unhappy about the current situation, and because of it, I can't be okay right now. Right? We all know what this feels like. This tends to be how we live. We've been talking about this since the beginning of this season, the feeling of not being okay. It has nothing to do with what happened in the past, what's going on in the present, or what might or might not happen in the future. It is we who are not okay deep down. These are just the ways that we expect life to conform to our preferences so that we don't have to feel the disturbance of our samskaras getting all stirred up, so that we don't have to feel what's really going on inside us. That's why we're perpetually busy, always got something going on. There's always a distraction, right? There's something that needs to be done. We're running all the time. What are we running from? Feelings. The emptiness, the fear of the emptiness. We don't want to feel the disturbance. We don't want to feel the insecurity, the anxiety, the precariousness, the fear that lie beneath the surface. We've been spending our entire lives suppressing that stuff or projecting it. Anything not to actually have to experience it. But life is not here to give us what we want just because we want it. I don't care how many life coaches tell you that you can manifest what you want. Sure, you can. So what? That's missing the point. Life is not about getting what you want. The point of being here is to dissolve the distortions in you that have kept you from feeling your oneness with all of creation. When we feel that oneness, when we know we are connected, we have everything we want already. This is, if you think that you have to go out there to get what you want, you are stuck in the matrix. And everything in the world is designed to keep pulling you out, to keep you in that belief, in that paradigm of it's out there. It's just around the corner. It's in the future somewhere and it's out there separate from me. No, no. It's already within. It's within us. It's in us. It is us. We have everything we want already. And then the things you thought you needed to make you happy start pouring down on you. You can't stop it. But not because you need them. Because you don't need them anymore. You don't need them. You're no longer reliant. You don't need anything outside. Because you've resolved the lack and the neediness that had you believing the answer was outside yourself. Because you deeply know that the kingdom of heaven is within. It's a feeling. It's a feeling of comfort, comfortableness, suk. That's peace. Serenity, comfort. So the way that life is unfolding right now has nothing to do with you, but nevertheless, it is unfolding perfectly for you right now. Whether or not you like or approve of what is manifesting in your particular slice of life that you get to experience, it is exactly what you need right now for your spiritual growth to bring you ever closer to that state of oneness, if you will accept it. If you will accept it. Okay, this is my slice of life. So it's perfect. It's perfect for me. It is what I need right now. It represents everything that I need to let go of, to bring me into that state of oneness. Everything is happening according to law, and we must enlarge our view of things and learn to surrender to the way that life is unfolding rather than resisting what that brings up in us or clinging to it. The universe is our home. And we belong to it. We belong to nature. We belong to its laws. And we can trust them to carry us to a higher plane of awareness instead of resisting or clinging to one part of the cycle, right? I don't want death. I only want life, we say. I don't want the downs. I only want the ups. Why don't we learn to take ourselves for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health? First, knowing that these are natural cycles that come and go. There is a natural law of rhythm in the universe. Everything is in a constant cycle of birth, life, death, and rebirth, which is observable everywhere. In Kundalini Yoga, the mantra Sa Ta Na Ma represents this cycle. Sa is infinity, eternity. Ta is life. Na is death. Ma is rebirth. Our seasons of spring, summer, fall, and winter are expressions of these cycles. Our cycles of sleeping and waking, dawn, day, dusk, night, the lunar cycles, our own human birth, life, death, and rebirth into a new incarnation, the infinite expressions of nature, the seed, the plant, the flower, and the fruit falling to the ground, rotting, and providing the basis for new life, planting, growing, harvesting, composting. This cycle is everywhere. And the more you look, the more you see it. It should give us comfort. Everything in the cycle of life is subject to this natural law of rhythm. Nothing can exist outside of it. Within the span of our lifetime, we experience this constant cycling, both outside and inside ourselves. Purification, this is what I've been on as a theme for a while. Purification is the death part of the cycle. It's the death part of the cycle. We might want to resist it, but it's what prepares us for new life, for rebirth. When you're being cleansed of your own falsehood, of self-deception, of self-delusion, all the building blocks of your psyche are being torn down, and it feels like dying. That's good news. When the forms of your life are falling apart and all your familiar references are stripped away, it's disorienting. You can't find your north out there anymore, so you have to go within. That's good news. When your body gets sick, it's expressing and attempting to clear out the inner corruption. A major illness can mark a turning point in consciousness as it reveals long-standing habits of living in untruth. Also good news. In such cases, deep cleansing, deep purification of the body tissues is necessary, along with deep cleansing and purification of the psyche. At some point, we have to admit how painful it can be to live inside this human, within this matrix of systemic control and limitation, and push the reset button. The soul cries out for freedom. And yet, all of this, all of it, occurs within the laws. Nearly 4 years ago, an amazing confluence of circumstances and karmic influences that I frankly don't understand drew me inexorably to a certain place in France, a very specific spot where an old forge had stood for hundreds of years. It was just a ruin until someone fixed it up, turned it into a house, and then expanded on that theme and created a beautiful center for renewal. Way back in the past, it just so happened that the first mayor of record of the tiny village bordering this land had the same family name as me. And I later found out, after we had bought the property named after the old forge, that this same mayor had also owned the forge in the 1800s. This uncanny synchronicity knocked my socks off to think that I was not the first person of my name to take possession of this spot. At one area of the property, you can still see what remains of the martinet, the power hammer mechanism with the giant stone wheel that used to turn it to beat the iron. Apparently, the forge had been responsible for large-scale deforestation of the surrounding areas, devouring the trees to fuel the fire. It must have been loud and smoky there in the old days. Now it's idyllic, so quiet and peaceful, just birdsong and river and breeze. I fell madly in love with the little valley and its view of the village with the ruined castle. I'm still in love with it, even though in this period of death and endings, it's one of the things to go. Well, actually, that's a continuing saga. It did go, but due to circumstances beyond our control, the letting go did not complete, and now I may be drawn back again, alone. Maybe there's still unfinished business, maybe there's a cycle I have to complete, or maybe life has something else in mind, I don't know. I was displeased when all of this went down quite recently. It did not fit in with our expectations. It didn't fit in with our plans. It was very inconvenient. It put other people in a bind aside from ourselves. I felt this resistance coming up. I felt complaining coming up. I felt a pity party coming on. There was the voice of fear that said life was making me pay for my sins. But the greater part of me kept breathing and relaxing. Gotta let go. I'm curious about all of this, and it has me thinking about the place and the energy of the forge, which has always fascinated me. I've always felt that I was being subjected to an experiment there, to an alchemical process, and that I was drawn there specifically for that purpose, for that transformation, which I both wanted and dreaded. And it was brung, as they say. I said to the universe, bring it, and it was brung. I told you about the dragon energy on the land and how it's linked to purification and transformation. Also, while there, I've been utterly drawn to the stars, which are so dazzlingly visible. And living there, I've been immersed in an aura of magic and mystery and expansion, at times bliss. And at other times, I have felt utterly crushed, desperate, afraid, and contracted, as if I were collapsing in on myself. This feeling of my human heart stretching out and collapsing in painfully, expanding and contracting. I mean, that's what a heart does. That's a heartbeat. But energetically, tremblingly, like breath, like a bellows. I noticed also this cycle of expansion, contraction with the iron that frames the windows and the doors of the house. The house that was built there on the forge, on the land of the forge, isn't sort of an iron theme, because of course it was an iron forge. And I've noticed how these iron frames around the windows and the doors expand in the heat and contract in the cold, to the point where sometimes I can't get a door fully open during the summer months. It gets wedged because the iron is expanded so much. It seems amazing to me that the atoms of the iron are breathing that noticeably. I later learned more about iron and what a special role it has to play in our universe. And to understand this, we have to come back to the stars, those twinkly, mysterious furnaces that are literally birthing the entire material world. Did you know, because I didn't, that everything we experience in the physical world, everything that exists, that stands out, is made in the stars? All the elements of the periodic table of the physical world are forged in the stars, and it's a fascinating process. I know they say we are stardust, but honestly, I always thought that was more of a poetic notion or figure of speech than actual fact. I mean, when you're living in a body, it's not so easy to make the association between this fleshy organism and the roaring furnace of a star forging all the elements of creation. And yet that's what they do. They are the forge. So there I am, living on the land of the forge, looking up at the forges in the heavens that made this planet, this body, this forge, and everything we see and experience. Maybe that's why I feel so connected to the primal creative force on that spot of land where the iron forge was breathing fire like a dragon way back when. Maybe I intuited that I would be forged anew, expand and collapse upon myself to be born again. So what's so special about iron? And what does it have to do with the law? What does it have to do with alchemy, transformation, purification, and the cycles of life and death and rebirth? Well, iron has everything to do with the life cycle of a star. And therefore, all life, my life, and your life too. What's amazing to me is that we can look back in time to the Big Bang and scientifically prove, because this is not theory anymore, it's proven, that nearly 14 billion years ago, there was this massive explosion called the Big Bang that is still expanding today. And before that, everything that was not yet, but it was potential, contained in an infinitely small point, a singularity that in yoga we call the Bindu. From this one, suddenly came everything. Yogically speaking, this is part of the largest cycle of cosmic time called a Mahakalpa, which is roughly 311 trillion human years. You know, the ancient Hindu texts describe units of time from microseconds to trillions of years. Imagine having that expansive a view of life. I mean, amazing. So this Big Bang, which started everything, is only half. It's only one half of a cycle, the expansion half One day, it'll contract back on itself. Think about that. And this expansion, contraction, rhythm, and polarity is mirrored by everything else in the universe at different scales. The Big Bang happened and spewed a formless, white-hot mass of plasma in all directions that expanded at an unimaginable speed and is still expanding to infinity. At first, the whole thing was just a hot soup of protons, neutrons, and electrons. But eventually, due to the fundamental forces of electromagnetism, gravity, and the strong and weak nuclear forces, the first hydrogen and helium atoms formed, and eventually photons could escape the plasma. Let there be light. So with these fundamental forces at play, we saw the fusion of hydrogen and helium resulting in the first stars. As gravity became strong enough to pull more and more hydrogen atoms together, the result was helium. And keep in mind, this process was happening all over the universe. Every time there is a fusion of the nuclei of hydrogen atoms, there's a release of energy, explosions of radiant, powerful energy. So this process of fusing hydrogen together with helium as the byproduct is the burning of the star, like our sun. Every star comes from this process of fusion of atoms. The fusion is the contraction, pulling the atoms together. And that fusion elicits the expansion, the release of energy as heat and light, and it transforms what's being fused into something else. Let's talk about the life of a star. So thanks to the fundamental forces, the hydrogen keeps fusing and burning, slowly growing a core of helium as the byproduct of the fusion process. There's this push-pull relationship keeping the star alive. Fusion contraction and radiation expansion. Eventually, when the hydrogen in the center of a star runs out, the star begins to use hydrogen that's further out from its core. That's when it starts to massively expand. And that's called a red giant because it also changes color. It also starts to lose mass and cool down. And at some point, there won't be enough explosive radiant expansion energy to fight the gravity that's pulling the core together. So we have this dynamic tension between expansion and contraction. We feel this within ourselves as well. That I always talk about the dynamic tension of growth. There's a part of us that wants to grow, that wants to expand, and there's another part of us that's contracting, that's pulling away. So anyway, eventually the denser core of helium, the byproduct of all of this hydrogen fusion, pulls the star into contraction, into collapse. So the star expands out, becomes a red giant, and then the balance gets tipped and it pulls back in and it contracts and collapses. And this collapsed star is called a white dwarf. So now there's just this mass of helium atoms left as a core. And depending on the original mass of the star, how much material there was to begin with, if it's big enough, the force of gravity can start to fuse the helium together, which in turn gives rise to the next elements of the periodic table, lithium, beryllium, boron, and carbon, as byproducts of this fusion. So now we're in a new phase of expansion once again. Eventually, the majority of the core is going to be made up of carbon, and then if the star is big enough and dense enough, gravity will pull the carbon into fusion in the core and form oxygen, silicon, and so on, creating all the so-called lighter elements. All of these elements are formed by the fusion process inside the star up to element number 26, which is iron. Up until that moment, the fusion and generation of all these different elements in the core of the star had been creating radiance and expansion by releasing heat until we get to iron. Iron is different. Iron, when it fuses, absorbs more heat than it releases. So it stops the expansion and reverses the process. A star with an iron core will always collapse, and this is when the star begins to die. There's not enough energy to continue the process of fusion that had kept the star burning. The star will always die when it gets to an iron core because it cannot fuse elements heavier than iron. So fusion stops, expansion stops, and now there's not enough outward pressure to balance the inward pull of gravity. What happens then? All the material in the star, all these rings of the different elements that have been forged over time, are sucked back in towards the core, and the collapse is sudden, rapid, and cataclysmic. The outer layers of the star, all the elements of the periodic table up to 26, collapse inwards at a speed of around 30,000 kilometers per second, bounce off the surface of the dense iron core, sending shockwaves through the star, and boom! Massive explosion. The star has become a supernova. And for a short time, the light of the supernova can shine brighter than an entire galaxy. But guess what's happened as a result of the cataclysm? A new set of elements has been forged by the process. Gravity alone was not powerful enough to do this on its own because it couldn't fuse elements heavier than iron. It required the collapse of everything that had been created up until that point into the iron core to birth the next set of elements from 27 to 92. That includes the precious metals, silver, platinum, gold. The power of the collapse crushes the iron core until it pushes the electrons all the way down to the nucleus, crushes the electrons, breaking the nuclear wall, and those electrons merge with the protons inside the nucleus. Electrons have a negative charge, protons have a positive charge, and so that forms neutrons. There's just a mass of neutrons left, and that's what they call a neutron star, the densest object in the universe aside from a black hole. About a month ago, I went to see a naturopath. She scanned me with her quantum frequency device that reads your organs and energy field and said, "Do you want to tell me what's going on, or should I tell you what I'm seeing?" I briefly and tearfully outlined the pressures of the previous 6 months, the sudden, rapid, and cataclysmic collapse of everything I had forged. And she listened dispassionately. Then, with a nod, she referred to her readout. "Your brain is under a lot of pressure. You're collapsing in on yourself like a neutron star. It must be all the changes you're going through. Just allow yourself to surrender to the process and die to everything you were before." I'm not kidding you. That's what she said to me. Amazing how someone you don't even know can be just the mirror you need. But let's get back to that supernova. The only way that elements 27 to 92 can be formed is through the collapse of the red giant into a supernova. And the only way we get to that point is through the formation of iron. So iron is a necessary precursor to the formation of all the other elements. Iron is the herald of death for the star. It's the turning point. It's what reverses the polarity. Expansion becomes contraction. It sends all the matter of the star back into itself. And if the star is big enough, it goes through a transformation where it will birth the more complex elements of the periodic table, including the precious metals that we covet so much. If you're wearing gold, silver, or platinum right now, the only way that's even possible is because it was formed in a supernova and exploded into outer space. Eventually, gravity pulled all these elements together that were floating around in interstellar space and swirled them into planets like ours. And everything we've ever seen and ever known is made up of the elements that were forged in these roaring behemoths that seemed to twinkle so innocently in the night sky. We can't skip any steps in spiritual growth. Before gold can exist, there must be iron. Alchemy is mastery. It requires mastery. The laws make no exception. There is rigor in transformation. You must burn. You must expand. You must collapse. You must explode. You must give birth to yourself. There's a game called Leela, a very ancient yogic board game, the precursor to a children's board game you may know of called Snakes and Ladders. To play Leela, you roll the die, which represents the forces of karma, and you work your way up through the dimensional levels of the game board until you are freed by landing on the square called cosmic consciousness. There are arrows that go up and snakes that pull you down. Sometimes you land on the tail of an arrow and you go shooting up to a higher level in the game. But don't get cocky, because on your next turn you can just as easily land on the head of a snake and be pulled back down to a lower level. This is not a punishment, though. Leela is a very deep and symbolic game that can be used to work through a specific issue in your life, and it always tells you the truth you don't want to hear about the patterns that cause you to remain caught in the cycles of suffering. Nothing in the game can be wrong. Nothing can exist outside the laws. And what it teaches you is that although you can and do rise up to higher levels of awareness in life, if there's anything still unresolved on the lower levels, in the lower chakras, you will be brought back down by the head of a snake to deal with it. Alchemy, the transformation of base metals like iron to exalted substances like gold, symbolizing the transformation of consciousness and the process of ascension, alchemy is a process of purification, of expansion and contraction, of life and death, of rebirth into a blaze of light brighter than a galaxy, ending one day in a singularity, back to oneness, back to the Bindu. Because that is the fate of some neutron stars, by the way. Again, if they're big enough, they collapse in on themselves to the point where they become a black hole, a singularity. No one knows what's on the other side of that. We cannot carry our 3D density into 5D with us. And that's where we're going right now. We've got to drop that density. We've got to let go. We must allow the process of purification to burn away the corruption. We must die to be reborn. Die to everything that you thought you were. Maybe you're not done with the forge yet. Maybe you haven't been refined enough. Maybe that's why things are the way they are right now. Iron is the herald of death. Iron is the turning point. Go within. Allow for the collapse into cataclysm. It's really okay. Remember, we never sacrifice the greater for the lesser, only the lesser for the greater. This is the law. What seems like the end of the world is a necessary death for the next set of elements to be born, for gold to be possible. Star, red giant, white dwarf, supernova, neutron star, singularity. Expansion, contraction, expansion, contraction. It's a totally natural process of birth that's been going on for billions of years. You are that supernova. Breathe in, Breathe out and relax. The universe has got this. I'll see you next time. Meanwhile, walk in grace. Thank you for joining me in the grace space, where you're always in the right place. If you love this podcast, I invite you to subscribe to it and submit a review.